the president on many issues, but they'd be very clear in public statements and tweets and social media that they disagree with the president's statements on Puerto Rico.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot in Portland. Challenging the Both Sides Narrative is a talk by Dr. Stanislav Vysotsky. This talk will provide an overview of contemporary fascist and anti-fascist movements with a focus on the key differences between them. Again, that's Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio starts our spring membership drive starting April 8th. And before that, we'd love to hear from you directly about why you support KBOO. My name is Mo, a KBOO volunteer, and I support KBOO because I grew up with KBOO. It's part of my life, and I feel having a community outlet like KBOO is so important because it creates a more vibrant community and a place where different ideas are not only heard but honored. Why do you support KBOO? Call us and let us know at 503-231-8032, extension 302, to leave a voicemail or tag us with your support on your social media posts. And thank you for supporting KBOO.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, yo parte chino. Check it out. Listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, this is Patrice Rushen, and whenever I'm in the Bay Area and I need good information and great radio, it's all about Hard Knock Radio.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Former Black Panther and award-winning journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal, who was convicted of the 1981 murder of Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner, but has always maintained his innocence, has published yet another book titled America's Favorite Pastime, Volume 2, in the series of Murder Incorporated, Empire Genocide, and Manifest Destiny by Mumia Abu-Jamal and Stephen Victoria. Today on the program, join us. By phone, we have Noel Hanrahan. Noel is a journalist with Prison Radio. Prison Radio produces 30 correspondents from prisons across the U.S. Hanrahan produced and co-wrote the feature-length documentary Mumia, Long Distance Revolutionary. Noel, once again, welcome back to Hard Knock.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, first, let's begin today's show with an update on the former Black Panther, Mumia Abu-Jamal. How's he doing, and what's the latest news regarding his legal case?
So I saw Mumia about 10 days ago, and his health is still precarious. He's nearly blind in one eye. He has cataracts and he has glaucoma. And while he's getting health care, they haven't been yet able to do the surgery on his cataracts. So it's really difficult for him to read. He's recovering from his very serious skin condition that led to his diabetic coma. So he's still in the process of recovery. And he's about 64 years old. So, you know, I would say that Mumia Abu-Jamal needs better health care. He needs to be home, and he needs to be treated more appropriately.
Yeah, and this is indicative. I think it's important to mention Mumia is a high-profile person, and it's been difficult for him to receive the proper treatment while incarcerated. Imagine the hundreds of thousands of others that are around his age, that are aging in prison, that are not receiving the same amount of attention. It says it speaks volumes to the failure of that particular system and how it's really about commodity bodies and not the person, and definitely not rehabilitation.
Absolutely. We deal with prisoners all the time. One inmate that I'm working with, Dennis Sowell McKeithen, has symptoms of Parkinson's but can't get a diagnosis and has very little treatment. And they're talking about wanting to make him work in such a way, and he can barely hold a pencil right now. Mm. So Mumia is often like every inmate in that he gets treated the same and badly, and then at moments he's able to use his connections with lawyers and the movement to force them to do things that are going to keep him alive. So it's really the movement and the lawyers that made sure that he had the hepatitis C cure.
Wow.
When Mumia Abu-Jamal got the cure, that meant that it was accessible to a lot of other inmates. The process of getting it rolled out is very difficult. Like, they're waiting till people are still very sick, which decreases the efficacy of the treatment. The treatment has a 96% cure rate, and the prisons are waiting until people have F4 cirrhosis. So they're reducing the efficacy of the treatment by like 50%. Mm-hmm. It's like a coin flip if you wait that long, but it's cheaper. So if you have an F4 diagnosis, it increases your rate to get liver cancer. Mm. Because they didn't treat Mumia Abu-Jamal for years, and they knew he had chronic hepatitis C, it has increased his chance to die from liver cancer. And that never goes away. Yes, you're cured, but the exposure to that vulnerability never goes away. Now, they're treating people, it's just like, yes, we've gotten care for the entire Pennsylvania inmate population, mm-hmm. but it's not rolled out quick enough. People are still dying who could have been cured.
Mm. Says a lot. Moving forward, though, we understand his health situation and he's doing better, but we definitely need to be attentive and stay on top of that. But also his legal case, where are things at currently?
So Lumi was just talking to me a few days ago and he said, I have never felt so much hope for my legal case in 25 years.
Wow.
Because Mumia has gotten the very first time that a common pleas court judge has ruled in his favor and has demanded that he receive relief by re-arguing his appeals. So 15 years of appeals were tossed out, a lot of bad rulings, and he could become before the court and actually argue some of this evidence that would prove his innocence. Now, the district attorney of Philadelphia, the big L liberal, Larry Krasner, has appealed, meaning that he's going to delay and wade through these very unsympathetic courts and try and get them to overturn this lower court ruling from the post-conviction relief application hearing guy, Judge Tucker. Now, the thing is, Larry Krasner, in his filing, said that there would be, that this ruling, if it went through, would apply to too many people. That because Mumia got relief and they said that the judge was biased, that there was an appearance of bias, that fairness and comity meant that he had to get relief, Krasner is saying it would apply to too many people. Since when does justice apply to too many people?
Wow, wow. Your thoughts regarding this particular news? I mean, you've been one of the key advocates regarding Mumia Abu-Jamal. Hearing this, where does it place you in regards to his Mumia Abu-Jamal's case, but then also seeing how the way in which this quote-unquote American justice system is working and definitely against the pursuit of truth and justice?
We all want our relatives to be home sooner than they were. We don't really relish the fact that Mumia is potentially innocent and has been in prison for 37 years.
Yeah.
But now more than ever, the tide is changing. There are people on the ground in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, Amistad Law Project, the Abolitionist Law Center, the Coalition Against Death by Incarceration, the Human Rights Campaign. There are family members of prisoners who are advocating in such a way that the landscape is radically changing. There's like a tectonic shift. No wonder Van Opportunist Jones came down to Philadelphia and decided to jump on board. Because there are thousands of people advocating for their people to come home. So It's time. And Mumia is going to be part of that wave.
Right.
Mumia is going to be one person who can come home, in part because of this. It'll be more difficult, because bringing political prisoners out of prison is much more difficult than just getting regular prisoners out.
Why is that?
But because the state has to, Mumia, if
they have an invested interest.
It's a vested interest in keeping business as usual,
right,
in not unraveling what has happened in the last 30 years to take a whole community, incarcerate them, to criminalize whole vast segments of our culture. And Mumia is not silent, and he's aware of what happened, and he's articulate, and he uses his pen and his voice to really shine a bright, white, hot spotlight on the criminally corrupt actors that built this system. The Common Pleas Court judges, the prosecutors, Ed Rendell, Lynn Abraham, he is not going to let them off the hook. And he is going to continue to be the outspoken advocate he was.
Right.
The reason he was targeted is because he is outspoken advocate. The reason he's been, they tried to take away his pencils, you know, in 2014. They sued to make sure that he couldn't speak, and we had to fight that. The reason he's so dangerous to the system is because he exposes their corruption,
mm-hmm,
and what they've been doing to the community for decades now.
Going back to my second to last question, focusing a bit on understanding what's happening with Mumia's legal case and your particular advocacy of Mumia's release. You've, you know, advocated for his release. When we look at prison radio, Mumia's voice is not the only one that can be heard from behind bars. Many of our listeners have the opportunity to go online, prisonradio.org, and see a host of different political prisoners and people that are incarcerated and are speaking out against that particular system. Based on that comment about it would impact too many people, it's a blatant, these blatant attitudes against the pursuit of justice and truth. What does that say to you as someone who's been this fierce advocate of justice and freedom? What's your thoughts around hearing something like that?
You know, I, as many other people, really believe some of the rhetoric, birthplace of freedom, Philadelphia, brotherly love, you know, and all of the rhetoric of American democracy. And studying law, which I've been years, and talking to judges, it's an incredible shock to realize that it's about efficiency, mm, and it's not about innocence or justice or relief. It's because the system couldn't work unless people were fundamentally denied their rights at every single level of the system. I asked a Pennsylvania Common Pleas Court judge, what do you think about the rule, the 60-day rule, where you can only present new evidence to the court if, within 60 days of filing it? She goes, I think it's great. I can take 80% of the petitions on my desk and just throw them in the garbage.
Wow.
Evidence of innocence. I said, what do you think about the Ron Castile rule, where the U.S. Supreme Court yelled at the Pennsylvania Supreme Court Justice Castile and said he couldn't sit on his own cases, meaning he was a DA. He can't be on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court on his own cases. What do you think about that? She goes, oh, I think ruling on your own cases and sitting in court, and you know who's innocent and who's guilty. I should be able to review my own cases. Well, that's like a fundamental judicial and
she's judge and juror.
Yes, exactly. So there is, it has to absolutely strip people of their rights in every single way. Habeas corpus, which is something that people might think everybody has access to. Well,
right,
in Pennsylvania, they instituted legislation called the Post-Conviction Relief Application that just winnows it down to basically nothing and makes the hurdles so exceedingly hard. So I had a witness recantation. She was the person who was sitting there in my Dennis Solo McKeithen case, sitting there at the bar that was supposed to have been robbed. She goes, Dennis wasn't there. Those were Molly's kids. I knew every single one of them. I said, Jean, how did you know? And she said, they came up to me and they said, Jean, empty the till. Dennis wasn't there. That witness recantation evidence, the main witness in a robbery, which my client, 55 to 110 years for a single robbery of the Sweet Love Lounge, of $1,200 and five patrons. No one was injured, not a shot was fired. 55 to 110.
Wow. Wow.
That witness recantation is deemed by the post-conviction relief application statute to be inherently not credible because it's a witness recantation. Just they label it, boom. And then it's like, you got to be kidding me. So they do that on every single level of every single part of trying to get relief. And it's like the devil's snare, if you know Harry Potter. It's like the Star Chamber, if you have any legal background. It's being here, being in the middle of it. It's way worse than I had any idea. And we need to deconstruct it. Look, time is now for abolition. The wave is here. You know, the level of incarceration only happened within our lifetime. It happened within our lifetime. But in the last 30 or 40 years, it needs to be rolled back the same way it came with a huge wave. And that calls for abolition. We need abolition, and we need it now, because the system is inherently corrupt and using poor people as fuel for this grossly destructive system.
Mm-hmm. That's the voice of Noel Hanrahan. Today here on the program, we've been discussing the legal case in the health of Mumia Abu-Jamal, political prisoner. Noel, moving forward in this conversation, considering Mumia's health, his long-term confinement, he's been able to write yet another book, a feat that many in less restrictive environments would deem pretty hard to accomplish. I've always viewed his tenacity, his ability to do this as a marker of his resilience and commitment to uncovering the truth. What can you tell us about this latest book? And how does it vary, or where does it pick up as opposed to where the last book, Dreaming of Empire, left off?
So this one picks up in America's rolling out of war, of modern-day warfare. And it's called America's Favorite Pastime, Referring to War and Wars of Imperialism. And the reason we need to know what's in this 550-page book is because we need to be honest about what every single opportunity for expansion and resource extraction has really been about. What are these wars about? The false front of democracy and leading the world, all of that, there are economic decisions behind it, and there are controlling of people and populations and resources. And you can see it if you examine it and if you really look at the facts. They are not giving us a lot of information, and this book is packed with information and goes through and it's sourced. The sources are a good fifth of the book, and it's really accessible. So you need to know your past in order to fight for your future, and this helps us do that.
Absolutely. How did Mumia and the team decide to create this epic three-part series in
so
Damning the Account of War?
They're writing, and it's called Murder Incorporated, and it's a trilogy. And they were writing and writing and writing and writing, and it became big. And Prison Radio decided to publish it because it's hard to sell a book that's big, but there are books like Vincent Harding's There is a River, or Howard Zinn's People's History of America, or Robert Fisk's Empire and Civilization series. There are books that are that big that you need to read. So we decided that in order to make it accessible, we would break it up into three books. And so that's how it became the series. And he's writing it with Stephen Victoria, who's a filmmaker from Los Angeles, who did a profile of Mumia called Long Distance Revolutionary. And
excellent film, by the way.
They're really having a great time collaborating. Mm-hmm. So it's a pleasure to see this level of collegiality happening. And we're doing it in spite of the way in which the prison tries to prevent people from visiting and from talking and communicating. So we're doing it even though there are these barriers. We've decided that, you know, as long as our people are inside, we're going to give them their voice.
Excellent. And this book is out now, correct?
Right.
And this weekend.
The truck arrived. And we wanted to promote it once we had the book, because sometimes it's hard to get paper. Right. You know, sometimes the printing is slowed up or whatever. But we wanted to really, really announce it once it was, like, in our hands. And so we have the hardback. We have the softback. And we're making it available at the big event with Alice Walker and Angela Davis at St. John's Presbyterian. That's 2727 College Avenue in Berkeley, Saturday, April 7th at 7 p.m. And there's also Stephen Bingham's going to be there. Pam Africa is going to be there. It's going to be a star-studded lineup. It's fantastic. So we're having that celebration, and then we're really warmly welcoming everybody to, like, take a look at the book.
Okay, let's review that one more time, because you said it quite fast. I mean, you skipped over, I mean, you have Alice Walker. This is going to be huge. This is happening this weekend. You have, you know.
The last time that Angela Davis gave an event for Mumia, there were 900 people there, all right? This is going to be a really sweet, big event. We're going to have Alice Walker, Angela Davis, Pan Africa, yes. Mumia's legal attorney on his criminal case, Judith Ritter, or Jeff Mackler will be there. Stephen Bingham will be there. Ula Taylor from UC Berkeley will be there. So it's going to be a special event at St. John's Presbyterian Church, 7 p.m., Saturday, April 6th, 2727 College Avenue in Berkeley. And there's parking.
And books will be available that day as well, right?
Absolutely. So the truck came, and we are going to make the books available. We have hardbacks, we have paperbacks, we have a lot of books, and we really want to share the release of America's Favorite Pastime, the second in Mumia Abu-Jamal's trilogy, Murder Incorporated, which is hot off the presses.
And I definitely wanted to be there. I had already previously planned to be out of town, but I know it's going to be an amazing event. And if people want to learn more about Mumia Abu-Jamal, and then also the work of Prison Radio, how should they go about doing so?
Just go to www.prisonradio.org, info@prisonradio.org, and just join us.
All right, again, Noelle Hanrahan, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
On the move. I want to thank Mr. Louis Farrakhan and millions more for the kind invitation to join y'all here. As we gather in person or electronically, we do so in a time of peril. We do so in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, when the state showed us all that they don't give a damn about black life.
The angry leaders that frame Mumia are the same names blamed for Hurricane Katrina. See, the levees would break, the waters would crush, and President Bush, he would forsake the poor and oppressed. So just from the smaller Katrinas, we experience a deadly effects in all arenas. Every year, public schools miseducate the poor, destroying any chance to advance and get more, man. Taxes paid for the oppression we experience. Police too brutal for me to mention. It gets really tense. Consumers of the media filled with ignorance, poisoning our minds with gimmicks and violent images. The daily hurricanes of hate and indifference, experience behind the prison gate on some bullshit. The courthouse laws and rules they reveal are threats to our welfare and not tools of our will. So just
but every day of our lives we see small but no less lethal Hurricane Katrinas. Every year in public schools, millions of black, Latino, and poor kids are miseducated, thereby destroying, as surely as any hurricane, their life hopes and chance.
We need the boom in the millions to bring true social power to civilians. You don't gotta swallow the bullshit from the one that you follow and free your mind from the mud that you wallow in. Hey, from the confusion of social repression and destitution, there is only one solution to this intrusion. The movement of millions to bring forth a revolution. Now who's in? Those engaged in the struggle for freedom and justice and the liberation of political prisoners. We need those dedicated to change so that rich and poor children are educated the same. Yeah, we need the movement to resist the fraction that brought you patriot acts but not patriotic actions. We need the movement that ignites, not divides us, despite all the trauma. Cause my people are survivors.
We need a movement of millions to build true social power, to free our minds and our bodies from the mud that we languish in. We need a movement of millions to transform our current social reality of repression and destitution. We need a movement of millions to bring back light to the eyes of our people, to engage in a struggle for freedom, for justice, and for liberation. We need a movement of millions of the poor, of workers, of women, of youth, of students, of prisoners, of all those dedicated to change, to build independent organizations that can't be bought or sold and will do the work necessary to be free.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out Anita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me? Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Now Woo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard not when they ain't gone all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat till they let it from the steel gray beats. They bleed. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Such a beast and their lovers are made with a breeze. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Let's go.
Real Talk Radio, you are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast, Monday through Friday.
Sing it,
girl. East Coast.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next, we'll take a look at the efforts, the quiet efforts to protect conversion therapy underway in the state of Texas. Recently, journalist Alice Brooks covered the topic of conversion therapy and what's taking place in the state of Texas. We thought it was only right to invite Alice on the show to discuss this topic further. First question, Alice, what is it supposed to do? And tell us a bit about the efforts to protect conversion therapy in Texas.
Conversion therapy is a group of different practices. Some of them are more spiritual and others are kind of more, at least purportedly, more therapeutic, but the goal is to make queer people straight or trans people cisgender, basically.
Mm-hmm. And talk a bit about the efforts to protect conversion therapy in Texas and what's happening there.
Sure. So in Texas, state senator filed a bill that would basically protect licensed medical professionals, including mental health providers, if they're performing a practice that aligns with their sincerely held religious beliefs. So a lot of advocates against conversion therapy and advocates for LGBT people are concerned that this would essentially provide protection in the law for conversion therapy. So this is kind of the exact opposite of what other states and municipalities have done in banning the practice.
Currently, how many states have currently opted to ban conversion therapy?
Sure, 15 states.
Wow. Texas State Representative Scott Stanford filed this particular bill this month, as you reported in your article for Rewire News. My question to you, however, is who is Stanford? What is his particular angle? I thought, you know, the fact that he decided to move in this particular direction, what is his angle? What is his reasoning? You know, he's been the author of a variety of different bills, some having to do with, you know, conversion. One in particular having to do with conversion therapy, but others looking at reproductive rights and removing them away from women. Maybe if you can talk a bit about his angle or his reasoning for wanting to be in support of this particular type of legislation, and what kind of is he just the usual Republican conservative that is really propping himself up upon this religious-based ideology around conversion therapy?
Yeah, so he's either written or co-written or sponsored a number of bills that kind of have the same framing of sincerely held religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So including one that would protect agencies that contract with the state to cover children in foster care if they wanted to do like a religious education. So, mm-hmm. Or if they wanted to impose a religious test on their employees,
mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Based on your research and all that you went through in preparing to write this story, what do you think is his particular angle at this point with wanting to introduce something such as this?
So I think conversion therapy is not very popular. The polling done on it shows most people don't think it works and don't really, and of the people who do have an opinion on it, most people say gay and lesbian people should not go to conversion therapy. So it's not a popular practice. A lot of people are still not aware that it's the thing that happens. So I think the idea of bills like this is to frame it as a religious freedom issue rather than as a let's protect this pseudoscientific practice issue. So it's kind of a way of making it seem as appealing as possible and kind of downplaying the fact that this is therapy that's been discredited, and basically every major psychological and medical association has said doesn't work and is actually actively harmful.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because I think there's advocates on both sides that are pushing one way or the other. So I don't want to totally say that most people have moved in this particular direction to ban or to ban conversion therapy. Some people are still in the space of believing that it works. And as you said yourself, you know, most people don't even know that this is still in practice. I think with the most recent film, Boy Erased, I think people had the opportunity to see that it's still common practice and this is still ongoing. And I think that's important to highlight, especially when you have a bill being introduced in Texas to protect conversion therapy. Moving forward, however, how are these particular efforts being used to discriminate against LGBTQ folks when we think about this type of, you know, conversation around conversion?
So often, so you mentioned that there's kind of an element of thinking people choose it. There's kind of also this idea that people are gay or lesbian or have some other queer identity or transgender because something happened to them, they were abused or went through some trauma. So I think in addition to kind of supporting this dangerous practice, these kinds of bills help reinforce the idea that, like, right, being gay or being trans is a result of some sort of trauma.
Mm-hmm. Like, something that you said that resonated with me, and I think it's important to explore briefly on this particular mm-hmm. program, even though we're looking at conversion therapy, your comment around people believing, even in 2019, that people are choosing or opting to be queer or be gay or lesbian or transgender is a choice based on some traumatic experience. I think it's counterproductive to have that type of mindset, but it still exists. And it's also extremely violent because what it says is that for me, the way in which I interpret that is that my decision to love someone of the same sex derives out of a level of trauma and inauthenticity, right? What are your mm-hmm. take and your thoughts around that? Especially, I think, when we think about, though, connecting it back to conversion therapy, when we think about that particular community, it's really religious space that you can pray the gay away, and oftentimes they will cite those types of ideologies or narratives when condemning or labeling the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, I think what makes it so damaging is kind of this mindset, like you said, that there's something, it's not just like a mistake to, it's not like a small sin or kind of an ordinary mistake people make and move on from. It does seem like a lot of people envision being gay or being trans or they're like being queer as like something, a sign that something is deeply wrong or broken.
Right.
And I think that is kind of why it becomes so hurtful and damaging.
Right. What was the particular interest for you, personal or professional, for you wanting to highlight this particular story and what is happening in Texas regarding this particular subject matter?
Yeah, I mean, a big part of it is the fact that it is very unusual to, so far, hopefully it will remain unusual, to try to protect conversion therapy in law. So that is that kind of drew my attention to it and drew my editor's attention to it. The other thing that's the other reason it kind of drew me was as as a queer person myself, I had heard the stories from people for a while of going through experiences like this and kind of familiar with what it's like to be in kind of a religious context where people are implying that your sexuality or your gender identity is kind of a sin or fundamentally wrong in some way. That's kind of my personal connection to this issue.
That's Alice Brooks. Brooks wrote a piece for Rewire.news titled, "In Texas, a Quiet Effort to Protect Conversion Therapy is Underway." Alice, I want to thank you once again for joining us today here on the program.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let us ha, hey,
ho, 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 knock radio, east, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping hard knock radio. Brown Buffalo, rah, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Yeah. Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
This is Greg Bridges. Over the years here, what I've really admired has been the First Voice Apprenticeship Program and some of the really talented folks who've come out of that program. With me are a couple of members of First Voice. These are members of Group 44, and I'm speaking of Shanice and Kay. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Now, you are, what, about 7 months into your program of your group?
Approximately, that sounds about right.
Yeah, we started in August, so yeah, 7 months.
Well, tell me what drew each of you to KPFA, what brought you into the apprenticeship program. We'll start with Kay and go to Shanice.
Okay, so I became interested in the program because I want to start my own podcast. So I took a workshop outside of KPFA, and I learned about editing and writing and how to put together a podcast. But the editing portion of the workshop wasn't really extensive, so I figured I needed more training. And I heard about this program, and I applied, and thankfully I got accepted, and it's been a real benefit.
Has this been more extensive for you? How about you, Shanice? What brought you in?
So I was at a conference, like a woman of color conference in Berkeley last year, and they had a workshop on like radio and women in radio. And it was actually some representatives from KPFA, and they were talking about like the benefits of being on radio and storytelling and how we need more women and more people of color. And I just thought that'd be really an interesting way to start telling stories and tell my own story and gain skills that I didn't have. So then I just became interested and started looking up the radio station and seeing what they stood for and things like that, social justice and advocacy. So I was like, yeah, I really want to do the program, and I applied.
Kay, you mentioned it being an 18-month program, and Shanice, you mentioned learning things that you didn't know before. Tell us about some of those things that you're learning and how you're able to apply them now.
So we've been learning a lot, actually. What I value the most is the digital editing. So we've been learning a lot of digital editing and producing our own shows. We have not produced our own shows yet.
No, but we've been learning the skills of like writing, how to interview, and just the skills behind it, and even like the board operations and what that looks like. So I think that's been very helpful as far as, you know, future podcasts and future technical things we might want to do. But even just the interviewing skills, you can use that in everyday life with people around you.
Now, things like this, these skills that you're gaining going to another school would cost you big bucks. How much are they costing you here at KPFA?
Other than your time, it's free.
Free. Free 99.
Free 99?
It's free. You just have to be really dedicated and committed.
Yeah.
Does this, KPFA being a community station, does this apprenticeship program take you out into the community?
We do have field assignments that is actually mandatory as an apprentice in the program. So I think we have to complete, how many field assignments, Jenny?
I think two.
Two field assignments. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we've been, and like, events, rallies, where we're recording and they're talking to people out in the street, whoever is out there. So, yeah, we actually are out there with some of the events that's been going on in the community.
Right. And we have, I mean, we only have to complete two, but we have the opportunity to go to as many as we'd like.
Yep.
Has being involved in this brought you into more community involvement than you were before?
For me, not necessarily more, because I'm a social worker, so I work in the community a lot, but in a different way. Like, yeah, the teachers rally, that's not something I would have really thought about, or I would probably heard about it, but never thought of like going and stuff. And so some of our apprentices actually went to the teachers rally. So maybe it just kind of broadened my experience of like different community events that that are going on.
Same for me. Same here. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it's beneficial in many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Just the community that we have amongst each other, like meeting new people and bonding with your group, I feel like it's I like that too. I like that aspect of it. Because we all get along, so that's good. Knock on wood.
Yeah, it's that far.
Well, that's the First Voice Apprenticeship Program is what we're speaking of, and I'm talking with Shanice and Kay about the First Voice Apprenticeship Program. They are members of Group 44. You can become a member of the next group to come into KPFA. How would folks do that? What would you say to someone who may be having some interest or didn't know that they are interested? What would you say to get them through the doors?
I would say, like, just one, just try it. Like, go for anything. Whether you're kind of interested, you think you're interested, go for it. Come to the orientation, see what it's all about. But if you're interested even in just social justice, advocacy, you know, really rallying around people of color and marginalized communities and things like that, then the radio might be for you. It's just another platform to kind of get your message out and to tell your story or stories of other people.
Right. Because you have that opportunity on Full Circle to produce your own show.
Yeah.
We'll find out more about the First Voice Apprenticeship Program at kpfaapprentice.org. You can also get information at apprenticeship@kpfa.org or call 510-848-6767, extension 235. Again, that's 510-848-6767, extension 235. Thank you.
My ignorance is dedication. This is anti-hesitation. It's a real end celebration. It's a dime block declaration. 59th and 5th Ave, granny house with vanilla wafers. It's the remedy to separation. Tupac of my generation. Blue pill in the open matrix. Red rose in the gray pavement. Young black nigga trapped and he can't change it. Know he a genius, he just can't claim it. Cause they left him no platforms to explain it. He frustrated so he get faded. But deep down inside, he know you can't fame him. How long should I stay dedicated? How long till opportunity need preparation? I need some real work and reparations. Or I run up in your bank just for recreation. Dedication, hard work, plus patience. To some more of my sacrifice, I'm done waiting. I'm done waiting, told you that I wasn't playing. Now you hear what I've been saying. Dedication. Dedication. Spent my whole life thinking out the box. Boxing homies 3-on-1, got DP but I ain't dropped. Chirp on me, here I come. Spin around the block, they blurped on me. Said I ran a stop sign, but that's a lie. I spent my whole life staring at the stage. Playing Sega, daddy smoking Sherman. Mama playing spades, catching papers. Grandma said I'd get some Jordans for my grades. That's my baby, when she died my heart broke 100 ways. I spent my whole life trying to make it. Trying to chase it, the cycle of a black man divided. Trying to break it, you take a log, this shit
proud about it, just embrace it. Minor setback for major comeback, that's my favorite. My ick and L said you do a song with Nip. K-Dot, he a better clip. I said he a man first, you hear the words out his lips. About flourishing from the streets to black businesses. Level 4, y'all living, given to false imprisonment. Listen close, my nigga, it's bigger than deuces and foes. My son, that's elementary, be close, my defend you straight like that. I give you the game, go back to the turf and give it right back. For generations, we've been dealt bad hands with bad plans. Prove your dedication by hopping out Grand Ams. You met the premier politicking with Top Nip and Snoop. Man, it's clock watching the way we move. Dedication.
Rapping with a rapper. For the last few years, in light of the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement and the arresting images from Ferguson, Missouri, rappers have created songs that rap not about wealth or sex, but about the wave of repression and resistance experienced by young black people. Songs like Hands Up by Uncle Murda, Soul Survivor by Young Jeezy and Akon, Cop Skit by Black Rob, and Stay Woke by Meek Mill could be headlines from today's newspapers. They're sonic musical signs of times that are not well in America. A rapper called Young Chris has been inspired by the rapper Meek Mill to join the call for an end to mass incarceration, and has even used some audio by me to make his points. Young Chris, speaking of Meek and other influences, explains diving into this arena. However, what he is doing has educated me. My best man, Bird, is currently serving a sentence of life without possibility of parole for something he didn't do. So that was all the influence I really needed to speak on these matters. I feel like I had to become his voice, along with many others that are facing a similar situation. Free Bird. I asked Young Chris why so many rappers refuse to address such issues in their work. Young Chris, in my opinion, I don't think they're outright refusing to discuss these serious matters. They're just sleep because it didn't hit home. I once was sleep until injustice had blanketed my best man. We as a community have to do better. I mentioned to Young Chris seeing Meek speak out against mass incarceration on the nationally syndicated show Ellen. Young Chris responded, that was big to get his story out on Ellen. We need as much attention to the injustices that has riddled our brown and black communities, along with the white underprivileged, for years. I've known Meek since he was a young teenager, and I've always felt he was special. If you're a hip-hop head, you may remember the duo known as Young Guns, which did a piece called Can't Stop, Won't Stop over a bed played by Heavy D called Overweight Lovers in the House. The song, recorded by Rockefeller Records, hit number 10 on the Billboard charts and ran for 29 weeks. Well, Young Chris was half of Young Guns, with Hanif Neef Muhammad as the other half. His message for hip-hop? We just have to speak for the voiceless, Young Chris said, adding, speak up and speak out. From Imprison Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
You know what free is? What's free? Free is when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Told my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my n***a I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life, what's
since
free?
Since I met, I was cunning, just got a pad out in London. I keep stacking my money, I need a ladder by summer. AK shots, ducking straight shots. Been a top dog, that's before the Kate Dots. Cracking in 06, immaculate showmanship. Talking like you Mitch, disastrous on the strip. Holding on your bitch, could've never sold you a brick. With them people, you never been on the list. Mona Lisa to me ain't nothing but a. Hanging pictures like swinging from his. We so different, you thought these didn't exist. The Megalodon, never seen on his wrist. I'm from the South where they never make it this rich. God is the greatest, but Satan been on his shit. Walking the pavement, I pray I'm illuminated. Over a decade and never nobody's favorite. Part and kilo go hand in hand like we gambling huff. My amigo a million grams when we count them enough. You was dead broke, I let you hold it back. You paid for it, but I around and stole the track. Screaming gang, gang, now you wanna rap. Racketeering charges, caught him on the tap. Looking for a bond, lawyers wanna tax. Purple hair got them s*** on your back.
What's free? Free is when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Told my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my n***a I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life, yeah. What's free? Fed investigations, heard they plotting like I trapped. 20 mil in cash, they know I got that up for rap. Maybe it's the Michael Rubens or the Robert Crafts. Or the billionaire from Marcy and the way they got my back. See how I prevailed and that ain't trying to knock me back. Lock me in a cell for all them nights and I won't snap. 250 a show and they still think I'm selling crack. When you bring my name up to the judge, you tell them facts. Tell them how we funding all these kids to go to college. Tell them how we ceasing all these wars, stopping violence. Trying to fix the system in the way that they designed it. Oh, say you can see, I don't feel like I'm free. Locked down in my cell, shackled from ankle to feet. Judge banging that gavel, turned me to slave from a king. Another day in the bin, I gotta hang from a string. Just for popping a willy, my people, my to the city. From a cell to a chopper, view from the top of the city. You can tell how we rockin' soon as I pop up. We litty poppin' like Bad Boy in 94. Big poppin' and Diddy and counting me out. Like my accountant ain't busy, that's 5,000,020. Sit up and count you, I'm dizzy. Fade 500,000, 100 round in a stizzy. As we beefin' and rappin', I might just pop up with Drizzy. Like, what's free? It's when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Told my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my n***a
in a land of the free where the blacks enslave. Three-fifths of a man, I believe's the phrase. I'm 50% of Duce and it's dead free, yeah. 100% of Ace of Spade, worth half a B. Rock Nation, half of that, that's my piece. 100% of title to bust it up with my cheese. Smokes my won't ever work together. You run a checker, but they never give you leverage. No red hat, don't Michael and Prince me, yay. They separate you when you got Michael and Prince's DNA. I ain't one of these house you bought. My house like a resort. My house bigger than yours, my spot.
Come on, man.
My route better, of course. We started without food in our mouth. They gave us pork and pig intestines. You discarded that we ingested. We made the project a wave. You came back, reinvested and gentrified it. Took sense of pride in the high that's free. And them people stole the soul and hit with 360s. I ain't got a billion streams, got $1 billion. Inflated numbers like we po' be happy about this. We was praising Billboard, but we were young. Now I look at Billboard like, is you dumb? To this day, Grandma afraid what I might say. They gonna have to kill me, Grandmama, I'm not their slave. Ha, 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 ha. Check out the bazaar. Rapping style used by me. The H.O.V., look at my hair free. Carefree. Ain't near free, enjoy your chains. What's your employer name with the hairpiece? I survived a hood, can't no shaitan rob me. My account's so good, I'm practically living tax free. Factory, that's me. Sold drugs, got away, scot free. That's a CCE copy.
me, guilt-free, steal me, and expect me to not feel away. To this day, you would say, y'all kill me, sucker-free, no shucking me. I don't jive turkey, say happy Thanksgiving, sound like a murder to me. Smoke-free, all of y'all, calling out toll-free. Label rob you for millions, yet you wanna put a hole in me. Sugar-free, season, but I'm salt-free. You lay a hand on hold my shooter, shoot for free. I promise World War III. Send an order through a hand speed. Kill you in 24 hours or shorter. You can't ignore the hand speed. Oh God, it's off the head. It's improv, but it's no comedy. Sign I fail? Hell no. Ha 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 ha. Thank you.
Gebu Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, April 8th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. When their relationship turns sour, a couple undergoes a medical procedure to have each other erased from their memories.
I'm erasing you and I'm happy! You did it to me first! I can't believe you did this to me!
Again, that's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, showing Monday, April 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, this month featuring soul, rhythm and blues, and folk singer Chris Webster. Webster draws from many genres, sometimes backing her songs on uke or even washboard, with Nina Gerber on guitars. Gerber honed her skills accompanying folk singer Kate Wolfe. She has accompanied and recorded with Carla Bonoff, Peter Rowan, Nancy Griffith, Greg Brown, and many others. The Portland Folk Music Society concert is April 19th, 7:30 p.m., at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steele Street in Portland. For more information, go to the website, kboo.fm, and click on Community Events.
Hey, what is going on? A little bit after 8 o'clock here at KBOO Portland. Time now for another edition of Drinking from Puddles. Hey, whether you're listening